All right. Well, good morning and welcome back to Corinth in Your Car. This is either episode 10-ish or episode 100-ish or somewhere in between there. And we're really glad that you have decided to join us today. Thanks for being here. I am here with Josh and Adam, as always. And today we also have a special guest with us, Dr. Mark Moore, who has been in town visiting and actually preached a really great sermon for us. And Mark, it's good to have you with us. Thanks for joining.
You know, yesterday I was going to see if the congregation, just say I am the father of one of the staff members and see if they could guess. And I was going to make a joke about being your father because I've always wanted to say, Luke, I am your father.
Yeah.
That's good.
I grew up with that quite a bit. Whenever you are in middle school and your name is Luke, pretty much all of your friends, just all of the time, Luke, I am your father. I'm like, no.
So basically, that would not have been funny for you.
For me, maybe not, but the congregation probably would have loved it. And at that point, it would have been just fine. So, hey, really, really grateful that you're here with us today. Why don't you give us a 30 to 60 second introduction of yourself? If people want to know who you are, what do they need to know about you?
Yeah, the most important thing that I've ever done is Father Josh Moore. And I'm really not even kidding about that. He is the best man I know. But in the process of all that, I was a Bible college professor for 22 years and then decided to leave the college because about half of the profs at Ozark, which you had, were guys that I discipled along the way, and they were better than me or going to be better than me. And I thought, if I can leave before they figure that out, I could still be, you know, liked at the college. So that's what I did. And it was also, I was 48 years old, and I thought, you know what, I think I've got another 22-year run. So if I could split my career between academy and church, it just felt balanced to me. So that's pretty much who I am. I'm a teaching pastor in Phoenix, Arizona. So our senior pastor preaches about 28 times. I preach about half that at CCV, Christ Church of the Valley. And probably at least that much outside of there. So I have a lot of flexibility to come to places like Corinth. And fun fact, there is no other church in the country that I preached at more than Corinth Christian Church.
No other church in the country. Yep. Wow. There's a stat. That's nice. And you you mentioned
outside of CCV probably, right?
Outside of?
In the rotation now, but.
Yeah. I mean, other than CCV, there's no single church that I preached at. I've done some interim ministries at a couple churches that lasted 6 months to a year.
Right.
But I think probably this one I've been at more. Because of the – been coming out since, 1997?
Yeah, I was about to say
– well, and even back in the day, though, like it would have been – I think it would have been in like 5 days.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It was like a full week. I don't think we called it revival at that point. I mean, it was a revival, but they
celebration,
we called it celebration,
right? Something like that. So it would have been the equivalent of a month and a half of Sunday mornings in 1 week. So
there you go.
So this is a blast from the past. Lester Waters was the first one to ask me to come out, and he called me on the phone and said, "Did Lester War?" I couldn't understand what he said.
Right.
I thought it was Lester Borders. And so I had this thing on my calendar, and then I'm circling back around. I could not find out who called me and asked me to reserve this time in the calendar.
Because there was no Lester Borders?
There was no Lester Borders, yeah.
Pre-internet.
It was pre-internet.
Can't look it up.
I mean, it really was. There was like no church website to look up or any of those kind of things. You probably had to use like the Christian Church Manual.
Yes, I remember you got, because you told me the story later, called me into the office at the college and showed me like how you tried to cross-reference the Christian ministry, you know, handbook of all the directory of all the ministers on staff and all the Christian churches in the nation. There is no Lester Borders.
And just a point of fact, Lester Waters was always pre-internet.
He did have an iPhone.
Sounds like it. Yeah. There you go. That's awesome. So you've been coming, I think Adam's dead stage 97, maybe 95 or something like that. That predates even you being here.
Oh yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Josh, did you ever travel with him to Georgia as a kid?
No. The first time we crossed paths at Corinth was actually summer of 2006 when I interned.
Okay.
And so he was coming down to speak that celebration week. I believe Mom and did Megan come too? Maybe. I don't know.
Probably.
We can't trust her home alone, so I'm sure
she did. I think so, because I would have been, you know, sophomore year, she would have just graduated high school. So here's what happened. I started driving my car, packed with all my stuff for the summer internship at like 7 in the morning. All like driving 12, 13 hours, something like that. Listening to road trip CDs that Jordan, my brother-in-law, made me.
Like he burned them on the computer.
Exactly. Yeah, they were called Oh Sweet Georgia. You know, all these the last of 7 CDs were only songs about Georgia. All of them were like, you know, Why Georgia Why, John Mayer, yep. or Georgia on My Mind, yep. and what's the Devil Went Down to Georgia, all the songs, you know. And long story short, I started driving at 7 in the morning, and they had a leisurely several more hours before they drove to the airport, got on a plane, had the easy flight, you know, landed, got picked up, and we got to Sonny's Barbecue in Conyers at the same time.
So wow.
I drove all day to meet them for dinner after they had the flight. So
that's crazy.
Did
you guys fly out of Joplin or Greenfield or Tulsa?
Yeah, I'm sure we did, yeah.
I remember flying out here a few times, but it was flew out of Tulsa, and it was almost like, well, the Joplin drive to the Tulsa airport is longer than I'm actually going to be in the plane,
which is
just crazy to me. You cover a lot of less space. Now, Josh and Mark, father-son duo, you guys have done a lot of things together in regards to this specific week. You guys split a part of a sermon series that we're doing here at the church. I remember it was either last year or a couple of years ago, you guys did your own series together,
which was
a lot of fun. And that has got me thinking that, throughout the years as father, son, you've probably done a lot of things together, especially if the most important thing you've ever done is, be a dad. And so, I want to ask the question, maybe get some stories out of you. What are some of the best things that you guys have done together as father and son? Maybe both of you can share one from your childhood, Josh, and one maybe from your adulthood life. Let's kind of have some fun with that.
One of the rules that we had when we were on vacation, I don't think it was just on vacation. If we're driving and either one of us said, I wonder how long it would take to climb that, we pulled the car over and we climbed that.
So, that's awesome. Yeah.
My favorite one was in Yellowstone. There was just this rocky knoll. And so we went out, all four of us got out. And then we turned around and there was this, like a legitimate mountain. And Josh and I are going, okay, that's more fun. Let's go see. And so Barbara and Megan said, okay, we'll wait here. I said, it'll take us 45 minutes, up and back 45 minutes.
I'm sorry, Barbara would insert here, 15 minutes up, 15 minutes back. So 30 minutes total. And it was, what, 45
he
minutes
was using,
up?
He was using preacher math.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, well, part of the reason was we couldn't see it from the ground, but there's about a 20-foot spot where we were scrambling, like rock climbing in Yosemite, and then we couldn't get back down.
Oh no.
And I hear these people coming up, and I mean, they're legitimately like, they've got climbing gear and ropes. And I said, hey, do you guys, like, I could hear them. I called down, do you guys have any ropes? We just need to get down. It's like 15 feet. So they said, no, we'll be right up there. No, they took like 40 minutes to get up.
Oh,
but we scrambled up in 2 minutes. They were search and rescue. Out practicing, and they look at us and they go, how'd you guys get up here? Like capuchin monkeys, we just climbed.
Yeah.
And they said, well, you know, there's a walk off. We went, there was a big boulder. We tried the left side of the boulder. The walk off was on the right side. We could have walked
about 15 yards away. Yeah.
So with handrails.
not quite handrails.
The sign that says you have reached the top.
I think Barbara's still mad at me for that.
So that was also pre-internet.
And
so,
cell phone.
No cell phones either. So no chance to communicate. So she's about to call the park rangers and send those guys that came up anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You know, it's the Lord.
That was fun. Yeah. That's actually a really good memory of mine.
Yeah, I remember, I guess growing up, that's one of them that I would have gone to as well. But I think just, you know, we were talking this morning at our house, how much our current backyard looks like our backyard from Missouri.
Like super steep hill going into the woods?
Well, it wasn't quite as steep in Missouri, but about the same acreage, about 1 acre woods surrounding it. And so I remember building a leaf pile so big we could jump off the trampoline and land in it, or building the treehouse, fire pits, you know, soccer goals in the backyard, laser tag, football. So those memories were quite a bit of fun. I remember one time we had a a project for school where we were supposed to build a to scale house where you could look at it from the top and have the rooms and create doorways and things. And most people used cardboard or cheap wood or something like that. And we had had, I think, a cedar tree fall down or something. And so he's like, well, what if we just made a log cabin? And so we got out the ShopSmith and built a legitimate log cabin for the house project at school. It was a lot of fun. Our cat ended up taking that over to sleep in and have as her home before midnight passed away. But that was a fun project too. So yeah, lots of stuff.
That sounds fun. Lots of things together. We're really grateful that you have shared the pulpit together as well to bless our congregation in the last couple of weeks. And so want to talk a little bit about this, each of your sermons, Becoming Unhurried. Let me start with Adam. And just, Adam, would you give us a rundown of what's the goal for this series of Becoming Unhurried? What do we want our people to really know and really do because of what they've heard in Becoming Unhurried?
Well, wait for it, but we want to help them become unhurried.
This is why you listen.
Yeah.
This is why you tune into the podcast.
To simplify it as much as we can. No, it's just as we look out and as we're moving into this Christmas season, Thanksgiving season, you know, we all know how busy we are. Everybody you ask, how are you doing? Doing great, just busy. Doing great, just busy. And it doesn't matter if you're, you know, a young single person, a young married couple with young kids, old kids, retired, everybody's just busy. And it just feels like that can't be, you know, John 10:10, you know, we always kind of go back to that. You know, I've come to give you life and life to the full. I don't think full meant calendar.
Yeah.
And so that can't be what God's desire for us was, just to be frantically running around all the time. And so it's just trying to set up just some hopefully simple, practical ways for people to be able to say, okay, so one of the ways I can kind of start to add some space, and to use Mark's word from yesterday, margin into our lives, is, well, okay, I can start adding some silence and some solitude to my life. I can start practicing the Sabbath, that just because Jesus has come doesn't mean that we don't need that anymore. You know, to be a little bit more simpler in our approach, and to be able to do these kind of things so that we can just begin adding those rhythms and those healthy habits into our life so that we can be able to experience what God truly wants for us.
Yeah, I think that's good. And so you mentioned the way that the sermon series is kind of laid out: week one, silence and solitude; week two, Sabbath; and then Mark, you got us. You continued with simplicity, and you preached that sermon the day that we are recording today. You preached that sermon yesterday. For those who maybe weren't able to tune in, maybe who weren't with us, or for maybe those of us who just need a refresher, could you give us like maybe a quick recap, like maybe 30, 60 seconds of what your message to the congregation was yesterday about simplicity and this idea of becoming unhurried?
Two big takeaways for me, Luke. One is Adam preached on Sabbath out of the Ten Commandments. The other of the Ten Commandments that really gets the bulk of the emphasis, like 60% of the wording of the Ten Commandments are about two commands, idolatry and Sabbath, because that's what we struggle with. And though we don't think of ourselves as idolaters, Paul compares covetousness or wanting moreishness to idolatry. And that really does capture our culture. The simplicity of life for us, understanding the second major principle for me is, Everything good happens in the margins.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The cup of coffee with the sunrise, mm-hmm. sitting on a beach, taking a vacation with family, an after-dinner conversation with your kids. All the good stuff happens in the margins. And so if financially we don't have margin, then financially we're not going to have the good stuff happen to us. So what happens with our budget is we live off of 110% of our income, the average American. Unless you're living off of 80%, which means 10% is tithe, and then another 10% is savings or margin, you're not going to have the financial margin for the good stuff. And it's even worse than that, because if we are living off 110%, this is more than 30 seconds, of our budget, everything you buy costs more than the sticker price. It's not just taxes. You mm-hmm. buy a bicycle. Okay, well, now you need to buy biking pants and a helmet and a lock and a place to put it. It actually is about, on average, 150% of what you, something actually costs 150% of what you pay for it. That is also true with time. So not only are we buying the bike, well, now I have to have a schedule of when to ride it and when to maintain it and when to take it to the shop when it breaks. And we just don't factor that in. And so we wonder why we're too busy, because we're overextended financially, not just with our calendar that Adam talked about.
Yeah. And so we're missing margins.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Mark, one of the things I was struck with on the Sabbath one, and I think it falls into the idolatry one as well, is like, those are like the only two commandments of the 10 that we would say, yeah, we don't need those anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're still all in on like, don't kill people, don't lie, don't commit adultery and those things. But it's like, hey, take a Sabbath and hey, don't have idols, you know, don't be greedy. And we're like, well, that's Old Testament. You know, we don't have to do that anymore. We don't want to be legalists or anything like that. And it's just, it's fascinating to me that we would just completely just wipe two of the 10 just off the slate and be like, that doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, and the solution is still as valid, that we don't talk about tithe as much.
Mm-hmm.
God has always said 10%, like 10% of your income, give it back to God. He's also, if you factor in the Sabbath, mm-hmm. it's actually about 12%, very close statistically to tithe, to rest.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the third factor would be to tithe, and even if you want to just tithe your screen time. My screen time is about 4.5 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
If I tithed that to service, it is the life that is worth living is in what you give away, not what you keep. Mm-hmm. And so just as a simple challenge, every man and woman listening to this, if you could help your family to tithe those three things, your finances, your rest, and your screen time to service, it would make an extraordinary difference in quality of life.
So putting legs on that. So if somebody's screen time, just because the math will be easy for me, is 5 hours, that's 300 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying take 30 minutes a day to serve?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or add it up in the week. If it's for me, it's, let's say 4 hours times 7 is 28. So if I should be serving someone else who can't pay me back.
Okay.
Not the neighbor who can, you know, loan me his lawnmower.
Right.
But somebody who can't pay me back, it could be an after-school program, or it could be through Corinth Christian. Maybe there's you're teaching a Sunday school class. If you were to spend 3 hours a week doing something for someone who couldn't pay you back, and actually there's a psychology of this, is that we get a dopamine rush. Mm-hmm. Actually, for serving, it's serotonin. It's the chemical of respect. When you get respected by someone, it feels so amazingly good.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to one of your guys yesterday who's new volunteering in kids ministry. I think every dude, like, we all want to be worshiped. Let's just be honest. We do. And that actually comes from God, who wants to be worshiped. If you want to be worshiped, most of us try to get that serotonin from above, from a boss, a coach, a mentor. Mm-hmm. Very hard to get.
Mm-hmm.
If you get it from below, it's easy to get, easy to keep, and your brain and body cannot tell the difference in the serotonin from below or above. So do the easiest thing for you to get the serotonin that you're addicted to anyway.
Yeah, lead a small group of fourth graders.
They worship adult males.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah, and they need them too. So jump in if you hear us. Josh, thinking about what you heard from your dad yesterday, what was something that stood out, was maybe particular helpful or challenging, and let us hear some of your thoughts.
The first thought that comes into my head is, I forget exactly the phrase, but it was something like, your possessions are actually possessing you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you get to a place where your money is not, you're not tithing your money, or you're not you know, living simply enough, you're not possessing your possessions anymore. They're possessing you. And, you know, I see that because of how easy it is when a ding or a buzz goes off, someone grabs their phone super quickly. you know, and even there's something I remember reading a few years back about phantom vibration.
Oh yeah.
Where you think you have a notification, you pull your phone out of your pocket and there's nothing. And so it's just, it shows how addicted we are to, and it's easy to pick on the phone. It can be anything.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, Dad, with like a bicycle or something, John Mark Comer in that book we've been going through, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, tells his story. It was a motorcycle for him that he got and then eventually figured out it cost this much money to maintain it. I have to ride it if I have it, like, and that's time. So for him, that was his story, you know? And so, you know, we have to be careful. That's probably what stuck out to me is just your possessions, how easily they can possess you. It's not just, do I have the money to have it? It's
right.
Do I have the time and the space, the margin to do that? And man, not just the respect we get maybe from other people. It's, I think we can get the satisfaction of life a lot more simply than we think we can. You know, just what was it this morning we were talking about? All the kids, you might not have been in that conversation. Mom was. She came up from the basement and she said, man, it is just so wonderful to hear the kids. There's seven cousins, you know, playing together. It's so wonderful to hear the kids pretending, you know, about, they had a piece of wood that they thought looked like a phone. So they were taking orders and somebody was, yeah, it'll be there in about 2 days. They're taking shipments or something, you know.
That's slower than Amazon.
But there's no screens. They're just pretending everything. Well, I'm the mom or I'm the teacher or and you're the student and everything is pretend. And it's, you know, it's the age old, why do we buy our kids toys? Because they play with the box longer than the actual toy. And I think it's true for us too as adults. There are things we can be satisfied in and find, you know, find our satisfaction in things far more simply than we think. Like the space to watch a sunrise with a cup of coffee, you mentioned that, you know, or taking a walk, you know, just anyway, that's kind of where I was going.
And that's really at stake whenever we're talking about becoming unhurried, because if you don't do something about the busyness in your life, then just ask the question, what am I really going to miss out on? You're going to miss out on opportunities to be imaginative. You're going to miss out on opportunities to be creative. You're going to miss out on opportunities to be playful and recreational, which literally the word is recreate, recreational. Yeah. You know, you're missing out on opportunities for margin in order to be a blessing to others and to your family. And so this becoming unhurried stuff is really, really important. Thought that yesterday, Mark, your challenge at the end was just so practical. You talked about how we as a staff, more than anything else, we didn't want this message just to be something that people agreed with, but we wanted this message to be something that people did. Mm-hmm. And so let's kind of wrap up your sermon before we jump into some other stuff by remembering and helping our people imagine what this challenge might look like. So your challenge, and then four different places for your challenge. Let's talk about that here for a minute.
Yeah, Luke, and actually I did something in the third service I didn't do in the other two. And so you didn't.
Yeah, I missed out on that. I attended the second one.
I started with the challenge by imagining a piece of paper, and at the top of the paper, write time. And now fold the paper down to represent how much margin you have with your time. On the right-hand side, write money. And fold the paper in. How much margin do you have with your money? The third one's with your energy. And then the last one, what was it, Adam?
Space.
Space. How much margin do you have in your closets, in your garage, in your storage unit? And just represent how much margin you have. That, when I was going through that, Adam, I had more people, like they were zeroed, they were dialed on that. And everyone's going, yeah. The best things in life happen in the margin. So how can I create more margin in those four areas? So the simple challenge for each of those areas is with time, I said, check your smartphone. Mm-hmm. How much time do you have how much time you're spending with your smartphone, and tithe that time. We've already talked about that. With space, if you haven't touched something in your house for 3 years, it's time to get rid of it, so that you create physical margin for hospitality and just for space to breathe. With energy
was screens. Time was the dinners.
Oh yeah, that's right. Time was are you having, the challenge was four dinners as a family at home mm-hmm. a week, which shouldn't be hard, but it's hard for most families. Yeah. And then the last one was, help me remember.
The energy was the screens, time, space, money. So the money one was the 72-hour challenge.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I actually got this from your sister, Josh, Megan. Okay. They say if they have the money in a store to buy something, it's really good that you remember my sermon better than I did, and that you make a child wait 48 hours. I say 72, and there's some psychology around that, because if we are impulse buying, then our possessions begin to possess us.
Yeah, we actually did that the other day. This really happened. Dominic broke his plastic bat. It was just a cheap toy bat, and it broke. And so he's like, Dad, I really want to get like a metal bat. And so we went to Walmart and we looked at them, but didn't buy them. And so he's missing it, but part of what he's learning is patience.
And delayed gratification,
and it's okay. Yeah. Because guess what we did? We went home and borrowed a bat from the neighbor who had a bat. Like, sometimes our possessions we don't even need, because, you know, why do we need you know, some tool that we're going to use once every 10 years if our neighbor already has it, mm-hmm. right? So,
and you know what you did for Dominic in that moment too is also you gave him the opportunity to experience more joy should he ever receive a bat.
Correct.
Right? Like if he is ever given a bat, not that I'm putting any pressure on you for Christmas or anything right. like that as a dad, but like should he ever actually receive that,
yeah.
now he's got an actual moment to experience. Oh, this is a gift of something that I've really wanted and been waiting for.
Yeah, we might technically have the money to go buy it, but that doesn't mean we have to.
Right.
For a lot of reasons, yeah. And
I'll just say this.
Christmas is coming this week at our more gathering, and my mom already shipped all the Amazon packages, and one of them was a bat-shaped box.
So there you go. So Dominic, you're not allowed to listen to this podcast.
Yeah, Dominic can't listen to this podcast.
I cannot confirm or deny, but... What should that be the case, and it is, then that's going to allow his grandmother the uh-huh. satisfaction yeah. to meet a need,
correct.
Which will emotionally connect the two of them. And Josh, you said something about delayed gratification, and you know this, you know, all your years in youth ministry, that is the number one lesson that assures kids' success in life. There's no other greater predictor of success in children than
that whole marshmallow test, right?
The marshmallow test is fun.
Look
awesome.
Up the YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube the marshmallow test.
Yeah.
That's a good one. So yeah, loved the challenges from yesterday. Here's an ask that I'll make to you.
Can I just interrupt for a second?
Absolutely.
As I walked off stage, I felt a real conflict in my soul, because I walked off, and Adam, you talked about a visitor that came in that was mm-hmm. not used to church. And I thought, I wonder if we talked about Jesus enough. And sometimes we talk about the Bible things and giving your life to Jesus and calling people to Jesus. That's what we're here to do. At the same time, mm-hmm. I really did not feel guilty after I thought about it yeah. is because we also don't give people practical applications yeah. that allow them to engage in discipleship with Jesus. So though this was not a call to salvation,
right,
it will result in salvation yes. if people actually simplify their lives.
Sure.
100%, 100% too, because like I know exactly the guy that you're talking about, and it was, wow, that was really helpful. I don't have a lot of margin in my life, a lot of time. I work too much. I work 7 days a week. And so this was really just kind of a good challenge, a good reminder to me. And I think sometimes we underestimate the power that, I mean, if we really believe what we say we believe, if Jesus really does, you know, make life better and make us better at life, then we should never feel guilty about saying, here's the way of Jesus. Yeah. 'Cause discipleship is more than just a, hey, make a decision, go underwater for a few seconds and come back up. Oh, good, it's all done. It's a lifelong pursuit, which is why it's a quest, whenever we're pursuing Jesus.
I'm thinking right now, Eugene Peterson, in one of his books I read last year, he talks about, you know, John 14:6, it says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And so most people, what Peterson pointed out is that most people think to get the life of Jesus. They just need the truth of Jesus. But he said
that's good.
You live the way of Jesus to get the life of Jesus and the truth of Jesus, right?
Yeah.
And so it's both. And so we teach the truth, but we also teach the way, and that both leads to the life.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to use that, and I'm not going to give Peter some credit. I'm going to give you credit for that. That was good.
You miss 100% of the shots. You don't take Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott. So there you go. Really, really grateful for the challenge. And what you guys are saying really, too, just transitions into what I'm going to ask. If you're a listener out there, a part of our congregation, and you heard the sermon, and you did one of those challenges, you went home, you immediately took a look at those spaces or that energy or that time, and you did something about it, and it has blessed you, would you tell us about it?
Yeah.
Like share a story, call into the office, send us an email, find us on Facebook, whatever you need to do. If this has blessed you and you have actually experienced the presence of the Lord and you've been able to live more at the pace of grace because of a challenge that you took, man, tell us about it and let us hear that story, because we love to be encouraged by that stuff too. Mark, really grateful for your words. We're going to transition and spend a couple of minutes on Josh's sermon, but we as a podcast don't take commercial breaks.
No.
But if we did, this would be a really natural point to do it, because we're transitioning from one to the next, right? And so we're going to do kind of like a different commercial break, and I'm going to ask each of you a question. If we did a commercial right now and you could advertise one of your favorite products to our listeners, what would it be and why would they need it? So you've got that opportunity, one product that they need and why they need it. This is your opportunity to do a commercial for that product. And maybe you'll get some royalty from them if they ever find our podcast. I don't know.
So are you going to take us away since you've thought about
it? I'm not answering this.
Oh, man.
Yeah, no.
Good grief.
Come on.
All right. What is one thing I use that people need?
Hey, I'll go on one. I'm going to go with the AeroPress.
The AeroPress.
Oh,
okay.
It's an AeroPress. So it's a coffee maker that you can make one cup at a time. And it's great. You make a cup of coffee in a minute. There's also,
super
if you
simple.
Want to get really fancy with it, you can go as simple or as fancy as you want.
Yeah.
Because there's all sorts of, like, hundreds and thousands probably of recipes, how long to let the coffee brew and all this stuff before you plunge it down. But
yeah,
it makes a really smooth cup of coffee, and it's one cup, so you don't have all the waste of a pot. It's very portable, so if you want to take it camping, you can do that too. And yeah, it's just nice.
Yeah,
it's
that's good.
Fun.
Hey, here's your Christian church tagline for that product. It is, I like my coffee like I like my baptism. Immersed. So there you go. That's a coffee joke.
Praise Jesus.
That's a coffee joke. There you go.
Okay, I'll go. Yeah. I was thinking about talking about a Tesla, because they're just awesome, but it's not for everybody, and it's a little pricey. So here's a $5 item for all you woodworkers out there.
Okay.
It's a measuring tool, and I got it from my wife, who they have these sewing rulers. They're about 3 inches wide, about 18 inches long, and they're transparent. So you can actually lay it on top of a piece of wood and still see through the wood. It actually is the best measuring tool I have for woodworking, but it comes out of a sewing kit.
Well, there you go.
That's great.
All right. Nice. A bunch of the Home Depot dads are headed to Hobby Lobby this day.
Yeah. There it is.
So that's good. Adam, what you got?
All right. So we'll see if this is, this probably isn't technically a product, but a Costco membership.
A Costco membership.
Go.
Okay.
$60 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And they have prime beef brisket at $4.29 a pound. And I just did one this weekend, and it was close to a religious experience.
Yeah.
It was.
Is this going to be on the table for Thanksgiving?
No, because we eat real Thanksgiving food.
We don't
Luke,
have to eat turkey.
And
I'm telling
we
you,
do
Pilgrims
turkey.
Ate it because they didn't have a choice. We can do something else.
Okay. So what you're saying is if you get your wife a Costco membership for Christmas, you kill two birds with one stone.
There you go.
Keeps on giving.
Yeah.
Clark.
Exactly. And there's one in Athens now. And so you don't have to fight.
Yeah.
You know, going to just outside of Atlanta for it. So
yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I remember I was really mad at Costco one day when I was 12, because apparently there's this rule. When you're 12 years old, you're at a point in your life where you're able to take the free samples. without adult supervision. So I'm 12. I don't know. But like that was a thing. Like it was like written on a sign back then or something like that. It was like all children under 12 need to be accompanied by an adult whenever they're getting a free sample. So I'm like 12 years old and I'm like, this is going to be fun. Mom's shopping. I'll just go walk around and get all the free samples. I walked up to this one and the lady was like, you're not 12. Like, yes, I am. She's like, no, you're not. You need to go get your mom. I was like, no, come on. I've waited my whole life.
Bring your birth certificate. Yeah,
you were a man child at 12. How could she deny you?
See, I really wasn't. Actually, I was short and baby faced for a very long time. In fact, all of my family. So my dad is above 6 foot. My mom was 5'11", and all of my brothers are well over 6 feet. The doctor actually told me when I was a kid that I would not make it past 6 foot because I grew at a very slow pace. And so it wasn't until I was probably 15 that I actually got to like 6'1", 6'2", and then grew from there. So I was really, really small.
So there's still hope.
Year-old.
I'm 43 and I'm only 5'10", 5'11". So maybe a few more years and I'll make it over 6 foot.
Yeah. No, do you really want to be as tall as this guy? Like airplane.
Whenever I was playing basketball, absolutely.
I hit my head on
enough play basketball
not to remember anything.
No, you stop it.
All right. Hey, that was fun. Let's jump into Josh's sermon real quick. This is the last part of Becoming Unhurried. And we're talking about slowing. Here's just.
Did you just say, let's jump in real quick to a sermon about slowing?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Jump in real quick.
Yeah.
Here you go. I need it
more
than anybody else.
Let's go fast to this slow stuff.
Fast.
Very slow.
Yeah, let's go fast and talking about slowing. Josh, you know what? Take as long as you need for this recap of what you said yesterday.
Sure.
Sorry, I got myself again. We're recording before he's preaching. But you're listening the day after he preached. So, Josh, take it away.
So, slowing in many ways was part of the series, but it was also a way to just tie everything up, really. Mm-hmm. It's the whole concept. In fact, if you read all the lists of spiritual disciplines in the Bible, you'll not find slowing on it. It's because it's sort of a modern term that people have written about, and it essentially comes down to intentionally placing yourself in positions where you have to wait, slowing your life down on purpose. And that is really so. I mean, the phrase that I used was slow down so you can catch up. Mm. Because when we're going so fast, we think we're catching up, but we're really missing out. And so slow down to catch up really to yourself, to others, and to Jesus. And you think about, I mean, that's really what our whole life call is, right? Mm. Especially in discipleship, the greatest commandment, love God and love others. And when we're just racing through life, I've been there before where I don't even know why I'm mad because I haven't slowed down to think about why I'm mad or I stay mad and I don't have to stay mad. I'm just a pouty baby about it. You know, it's like, slow down, hold on. So the whole idea was slowing. And I tried to be really practical. So really it was after every, you know, yourself, others, and Jesus, just to give give our congregation, practical ideas. And so, I mean, just not making it too difficult, but driving slower or getting in a long checkout line, or taking a walk, you know, just intentionally slowing your life down so that you can be present to the moment for yourself, for others, and for Jesus. And really, that kind of wraps up the whole series. When we slow down, that's really when we're going to catch up to the life we want.
So. I love what you did with that application, because what it really, at least in my mind, where I went was there's a lot of restoration in the space that we make whenever we are slowing down to catch up, especially, I mean, just think about it. You said to others, to ourselves, to Jesus, and you know, when we sinned, what sort of separation did we feel? Well, we were separated from our Creator. We were separated from others. We were separated from ourselves, from creation. And whenever you actually slow down to create space for all of those. There's actually some redemptive restoration language in this too. So I really appreciated that message. I do want to ask this question too, because we've been in Becoming Unhurried. We did have a sermon on Sabbath, which is the Ten Commandment, keep it holy, remember it. We probably ought to practice that as a culture today. But then we also have the sermon on slowing. And I want to get some just like clarification thoughts maybe from a couple of you. What would you think are the differences to help our people just kind of imagine and understand? What would be like maybe a couple of differences between what slowing looks like and what Sabbath looks like?
I think the most natural one is, I mean, if you just look at the definition of Sabbath, it means stop. So there's a difference between slowing down and stopping. Mm-hmm. Sabbath is a full stop. It's a period at the end of the sentence. Slowing is just a habit of life. It's 7 days a week where, you know, one line that really stuck out to me in the book was the challenge to get to an appointment 10 minutes early. Sans phone is how Comer said it. So without your phone. And we think, man, I want to maximize the time. I want to get there just when I have to. But often something happens, you know, there's traffic or there's an accident and then we're frustrated. And one thing that really challenged me, he said, what version of me is showing up to the appointment if I'm rushing there? So he just challenged and said, what would it look like to get there early and just not take your phone, but just pray, you know, or when you're sending an email, just do it a little slower and pray for the person you're writing to. All sorts. That chapter was really, really fun. If you don't have the book, you can pick it up or pick up. There's a free Becoming Unhurried or How to Unhurry, I think, is on his website. He has a lot of practical ideas of just how to slow your life down. So in my mind, the difference is slowing, to make a long story short, slowing is kind of daily things you can do to just slow your pace of life down. And a Sabbath is a full stop. Yeah. So
if I could add on to that, there's actually some business principles. So for all you guys that are heading to work right now or coming home from work from business meetings, we counsel everyone on our staff to get to meetings 5 minutes early and to stay 5 minutes after. Because you all know this. What happens in a meeting is not what really happens in a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
It's
right.
5 minutes before and it's 5 minutes after that the real decisions are made. Mm-hmm. And if you are hurried, you're missing the real meeting, which is engagement with people before and after.
Yeah.
Yeah, we call it the parking lot meeting.
Yeah.
You know, it's like more gets done in the parking lot after a meeting generally. Well, I won't say all the time, but many times than what's actually happened around the table whenever you're sitting there. It's just conversations afterwards.
One of the practices I do before I meet with someone, I look up all the information about them that I can. It takes about 5 minutes to know. I want to know more about the other person before I ever get to the meeting, because then when I'm in the meeting, I can really engage with them at a human level. And that's just, for me, part of – that's not exactly slowing, but in a sense it is, because you're taking the time to know a person rather than know an event.
Yeah, and I love the idea of just getting there early. My my Grandpa Gibson was the guy that was like, if you're not 15 minutes early, you're late.
Yeah.
But it was the same thing, because whenever somebody would show up late, they're like, yeah, traffic was bad. It's like, no, you just didn't leave.
Plan.
You didn't plan. You've always got a plan, you know, for that, because, you know, you don't want to be late. You don't want to be in a hurry. You don't want to be in a rush.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like especially, you know, like maybe in Thanksgiving week, I guess whenever this airs, it'll have already happened, but just about guaranteed there's going to be somebody in your family is always that one person in the family that shows up, you know, 15 minutes late, and they're running in and they're slinging casserole everywhere, you know, as they're trying to get in there, and it's just a rush. And I think whenever we're all going fast, it not only affects us, but it ends up affecting the others around us. And so learning to keep that pace.
Yeah, Luke, I would answer the question. I thought Josh's answer was fantastic. You know, one is the full stop at the end of the sentence. The other is the pace. I would define it this way, because Sabbath is an Edenic command, not a Mosaic command. This is in biology.
Yeah.
At the very beginning. So Sabbath is a biological need, and slowing is a strategic move.
That's good.
Yeah, and one thing, so to piggyback on that, Comer in the book talks about the reason this isn't in the spiritual disciplines list is because, well, Jesus didn't have an iPhone and he didn't, you know, he wasn't organizing his calendar and all this stuff. Like
that's a hot take we could get to later.
You know,
would Jesus, if he could,
you know, and so it is kind of like a necessary command for the 21st century. And even it's funny, you know, people talking about were resistant to the sundial because when it came out, they're like, what is this dividing our time? And it's this demonic thing coming up and, you know, dividing the day up. So it is, it's been around for a while, just this need to slow down, but the 21st century is a whole nother level of speed.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So this is a strategical move then, slowing is that. And so let's kind of wrap up our conversation with your challenge, Josh, which was to our congregation, was simple as this: slow down once a day. So let's put some legs to that and maybe talk about what that might look like for you or what this could look like for our people. How could you slow down? How could they slow down? What would that look like on a daily basis? Love to hear from all of you on that.
I think just some of the practical stuff that was talked about. So arrive 15 minutes early, drive slower, get in a long line on purpose. And I love this because we were having this conversation recently and somebody said, I don't think I'm hurried. I just think I'm efficient. It's like, well, sure. But here's what happens is the psychology behind putting yourself in a long line. Part of it is you've offended yourself. You've inconvenienced yourself. So when life offends you or inconveniences you or someone else offends you or inconveniences you, it's like, water off a duck's back. Water off a duck's back. There you go. It just rolls off. Like, you're used to being inconvenienced, so no big deal. And it's not this huge thing that rearranges your whole day. So don't make it too difficult. I mean, if you're healthy, park in the farthest parking spot and walk. Take a walk around the neighborhood. Just do something practical and easy. Don't over-spiritualize it.
Is this the chapter that had like
21?
Okay.
21 different ideas. Yeah. Got to slow down. So, yeah.
So there's a lot.
I'll give my hot take on that and then let Adam finish the podcast. I think the best leaders I know don't talk about time management. They talk about energy management.
Mm.
And so slowing is a strategic move for energy management. And two things that have been really helpful for me is when I was younger, I wanted to try to sleep less. It was a miserable failure. And by miserable, I mean, I was miserable. My wife was miserable and I got less done because I was more tired. And I just accepted I need 8 hours to sleep a night. Mm-hmm. And I sleep unapologetically 8 hours to sleep a night plus nap when I can on Sundays. Sleep is one of the ways that you biologically can slow yourself down. The second thing that I did was for a long season, we as a family had tea time after dinner. I just make some tea, sit around and talk. No screen, no agenda. Those are some of the best memories that we have. And Barbara and I have a form of that now. It looks a little bit different, but a deliberate time, whether it's 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 5 minutes after a meal, where you just sit and talk.
That's good. I think, let me follow up with this because what you're talking about here is a word that we like to throw around all of the time here at Corinth, which is the word rhythm. Like we want to establish spiritual rhythms that help us in our connection to Christ and our connection to others. And rhythms, really, we haven't said it from stage as one of our like actual days of sermon series, but a lot of what we're talking about is establishing rhythms of slowing and of Sabbath and of silence and solitude and of simplicity. And so I want to ask you, Mark, like you're just like anybody, a busy guy, have lots of hats that you wear, all that sort of stuff. You've shared with us some. Talk to us a little bit about when you are at your best, what are the rhythms that are a part of your life that help you become unhurried?
Yeah, for me, rhythms come in waves. Just like any concert, some movements of the symphony are faster, some are slower. This is, for us, a frenetic season between Thanksgiving and Christmas. We just know, Barb and I just know, we're not going to get our personal time that we normally have together. But one that is inviolable is praying together before I go to work in the morning. We don't pray every day together, but on days that I go to work, we're going to pray together. That's inviolable. We also eat dinner together every evening. Sometimes it's out. Mostly it's at home. That's inviolable. Before the TV goes on, like there's no screens at the dinner table, period. And so I would say those are two, that prayer in the morning and dinner in the evening, that have really been like, no matter what season we're in, what rhythm we have, whether it's fast or slow, those are pillars.
Okay, cool. You guys got anything to kind of add, weigh in on with rhythms that have kind of helped you become unhurried?
Well, I had a follow-up question for Mark, because in the message yesterday, you said that you schedule out your day in 15-minute increments.
I do.
And so how do you maintain a how am I trying to phrase this? How do you maintain the flow of the day in a way to where you're not just going at a breakneck pace? I mean, are there like 15-minute breaks to where it's just like, hey, it's on my calendar, nothing, jack squat? Or is there, you know, just help us understand.
Every other day when I'm in the office, every other day I schedule a time to go greet another team.
Okay.
Sometimes that's another office team, people who are on staff. We have a fairly large staff. We have a group of volunteers that come in. They're older people. They love it when I walk in because they just see me on stage.
Mm-hmm.
That is a deliberate slowing for me.
Gotcha.
I also tend to eat lunch in my office. I don't do a lot of lunches out, maybe one or two lunches out a week. The others, I'm having a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
I don't work. I pull up YouTube and I watch shop YouTube.
Yeah.
I'll watch like, you know, comedy YouTube for about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a deliberate time for my mind can settle back in.
Yeah. Cause like I've known you for a while and I think it's safe to say you are pretty good at locking in on a task.
Mm. Yeah. It's embarrassing.
And so there has to be some sort of like those intentional moments to where you're like, I've got to breathe. I can't do this, you know?
Yeah. And I've also told people around me that I'm task driven. So if you come in my office, just know I will be rude.
Mm-hmm.
I'll appear rude. It's just my mind shifting from the task I'm on to giving you attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that about myself. So I warn people around me, hey, here's what you can expect.
How long did it take you to learn that?
About 30 years.
So it was a quick process.
Yeah. And one of the things that has really struck me is that every good thing Jesus did was an interruption.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've tried to get, I'm still working on that. I'm 59 years old. Hopefully by, you know, 70, I'll be able to just get this, that when people interrupt me, that's the good stuff.
Yeah. I think, does that come from Quest? Did you write about that in Quest?
I did write that from Quest, but I stole it from someone else and I forgot their name now. So yes, it's mine.
Okay. Yeah.
That's good.
No, because I remember reading that and it was just, that was so enlightening to me because like, I hate interruptions. I hate them. You know, it's like, in the way I look at it, it's like, well, it's gotten in my way or this has popped up. But that was really challenging and convicting to me. It's like, I need to, and this goes back to the margin talk. I've got to have space in my life so that interruptions can come in.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I am, you know, wide open or however you want to phrase it, you know, wall to wall, then I have no space for interruptions and they're going to make me even crankier.
Well, and here might be a way for me. And since you're, you know, you and Josh both are communicators as well. All our best illustrations are from interruptions. So maybe the interruption is a great illustration for another sermon.
So it's research.
It's research.
I think what I'm hearing too is just on all of this, flipping the script. Because we think that slowing down is actually an inconvenience. But when we flip the script and it's our attack against what the devil is trying to do to our soul, all of a sudden, hey, we're not on the defensive. No, we're on the offensive, slowing down to catch up, you know, or we're on the attack because the interruption might actually be God's opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
If we flip that script where it's not actually an interruption being done to me, it's God's opportunity that I have to go get, you know.
Yeah, Luke hasn't been married long enough to realize this, but we think that people value us because of what we do. They don't. They value us because of who we are.
Yeah.
And what we, sometimes the slowing is a way of catching up to who we are or who we want to be. And I think a mature man, mature woman begins to realize later in life that it's who I am that matters, not what I do.
Yeah. I think too, something just popping into my head, Adam, your sermon, the first one of the series, the question was asked about silence and solitude. Do you think sometimes we have so much external noise
right.
to crowd out the internal noise because we're scared of the internal noise? And I think that's the same principle when it comes to slowing down, that we have so much external speed, because of, it's kind of the same thing, you know, the internal speed. If we ever slow down, we're kind of scared to just sit there, or we don't know how, at least.
Well, it's FOMO as well.
Yeah, we're fear. Yeah, there's a fear of missing out on this opportunity or whatever it is. So,
Luke, you got to just end the podcast here because we're not going to say anything more intelligent than that.
Right on. We're not going to end the podcast before we have a little bit of fun with the game, which we absolutely can move to right now. So, because we're just shy of the hour mark. Christmas is coming up. So by the time this podcast is released out into the world, Thanksgiving is done away with. So it is appropriate to get out the Christmas stuff.
Hey, our tree's already,
you know, done. And hopefully, you know, I'm going to go ahead and speak this into existence. Hopefully USA is 2-0 in the World Cup by the time this comes out. You know,
today they play,
today,
right?
Today is versus Wales, 2 o'clock, 1:30, I think, maybe.
Is that a basketball tournament?
No, Adam.
It's the world's most popular sport.
It's the world's most beautiful sport. Anyways, Christmas is coming up, so it's appropriate to do this. I want to play a game where the two of you are trying to be in sync with each other. So father, son, see if you guys can get the same things, right? So this is all Christmas themed. I'm going to give you a category. So I'm going to give you an example, like if I was to say like grocery store. Okay, so you think about what comes to mind, okay? I'm going to give you a category. I'm going to count to three, and as soon as the countdown ends, you're both going to say something at the same time and see if you can get the same thing. Okay, so the goal is to be the same, right? So you want to say the same thing, but it's all Christmas theme. Does it make sense? Clear as mud?
Clear as mud, moving ahead like a herd of turtles in a snowstorm.
Never heard of that before.
That comes from Lester Waters.
There you go.
Lester Waters.
All right. First category, Christmas song. 3, 2, 1.
Jingle Bells.
Hey. 0 for 1.
0 for 1.
0 for 1 on that one.
He also has, you know, young children in his house, and we're empty nesters, so Silent Night.
Jingle Bells.
Yeah. Sounds about right. Yeah.
That was Dominic's first, like, words, I think.
Jingle Bells?
He was humming. He was singing before he even spoke, I think. Yeah. So,
hey, Adam, I'll let you chime in on this since we're on the category of Christmas song. You want to go ahead and tell everybody what the worst Christmas song is?
Oh, gosh. It's got to be Mary, Did You Know?
Okay. Yeah,
ooh,
I agree.
That's a hot take for some people, for sure.
I thought you were going to go Little Drummer Boy.
Oh, that is that one,
okay,
too.
There you go.
Yes, so there are two. There's so many.
So do you not like the scripture that's in that song, or what is it that you don't like about it?
Mary, Did You Know?
Yeah.
I just kind of think it's like, well, yeah, she did. I mean, she didn't know everything, but yeah, she did. I mean, Angel kind of laid it out to her.
The song is,
so it's just kind of like, what's the point, man?
It's a 10-second long song. Mary, did you know?
Yeah, mostly. Mostly.
Kind of.
I was scared, but I said yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a great song, but yeah, Little Drummer Boy, it's like, can I play my drums for the sleeping baby? No, get out of here, you brat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rum-ba-bum-bum.
Yeah.
All right, hey, so
go bug your parents.
Next category is Reindeer of Santa. Reindeer of Santa. 3, 2, 1.
Rudolph.
Boom.
Hey, there we go.
Red nose. Okay, so we've got one for two.
Or one, yeah.
Okay, here we go. Next category, something green. 3, 2, 1.
Christmas tree.
Ooh.
Mistletoe.
Nope. See, got another one wrong.
Yeah, there we go.
Empty nest versus not.
We just cut down a Christmas tree a few days ago, so yeah.
Okay. All right. Food item for Christmas dinner. 3, 2, 1.
Turkey.
Boom. Okay. Got it. Doesn't have to be. I'll just point it out there. next one is yard decoration. 3, 2, 1.
Giant lights. Cali.
Oh, yeah.
You said
what?
Giant Cali.
What is this?
What is that?
So my mom's dog, rest in peace, Cali was...
No, her name was Cali. She's dead now. That's why he said rest in peace. The dog's name was not rest in peace.
Sure.
My mom's dog, Cali, rest in peace. Yes. How long did she live? Like 13 years?
Yeah, 13 years. And just point of fact, she was a Christian dog.
She did worship Jesus. She was bowing down. I have a picture of it on my iPhone to prove it.
Cool.
Yeah. So, no, Callie was a miniature schnauzer, awesome dog. She was got right after Megan was married and I moved, right? Or right around that time. So just my mom's best, you know, best kind of house friend and all that stuff, like incredible dog. And anyway, they have a Christmas decoration at their house. It's an inflatable miniature schnauzer.
Oh, love it.
Giant, like
12 feet.
Giant, like
12 feet high.
12 feet high.
Okay,
love
so
it.
That's so, good. Okay. I like that. Okay, let's do it. Let's do a couple more. Christmas movie. 3, 2, 1.
Home Alone. Mm.
They are not in sync. Yeah, they've only gotten the one, right? The reindeer?
So only, no, they got turkey, turkey as well.
Okay, so we got two. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's go with something cold. 3, 2, 1.
Ice cream. I was just slowing down.
You were slowing,
yeah, slowing down. Yeah. Being intentional.
Yeah, being intentional. I'll let it slide. Man. Okay. Okay. Two more. Item of winter clothing. 3, 2, 1.
Stocking
scarf.
Hat.
Scarf.
I was thinking of your.
This is the same.
I was
category.
Thinking of your bald yeah. head. So
yeah, there you go. Okay. Right. Last one. Item on a snowman. 3, 2, 1.
Coal.
Man. Carter.
Starts with the same letter.
Yeah. Carrot, coal.
We only had two options.
Exactly.
Chose a different one.
Yeah. Something.
I guess you could have said snow.
No. So one funny story popped into my head about being in sync. Growing up, we realized a lot of our same, like we had the same mannerisms. And I remember specifically one time we were watching a movie in the basement. We're both on the couch. We looked over. Both of us were sitting the exact same way, like every arm, limb, everything. And we just looked at each other and kind of rolled our eyes and laughed and chuckled and changed to a different position, both of us. Same position the second time.
The exact same time, yeah.
Laughed, chuckled, changed positions a third time, and it was the same. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's so you're in sync there, but not
things.
Necessarily
yeah.
on the game that I just threw at you. And
correct.
That is okay. Because you are not defined by your results
that's right.
of
that's right.
that game. So, hey, really grateful that you have tuned in to Corinth in Your Car today. Josh, Adam, grateful for your insight as always. Mark, thanks for being here.
Thank yeah, and real quick, us. Mark, yeah. if any of our people want to follow you on social media, YouTube, anything, you got anything to throw out there to them?
Sure, markmoore.org, or if you're following Core 52 or Quest 52, it's the title of the book, .org as well. I'm seldom on social media, but sometimes I post videos that are helpful. So you could subscribe on YouTube to Quest 52 or Core 52.
Yeah, your Ask Pastor Mark stuff is some of my favorite stuff that you do.
No, thank you.
I love it. I really, really do.
I'll post another one next week just for you.
Hey, love it.
There you go. Right on. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Happy Happy Cyber Monday.
Thanksgiving, Christmas, yeah, Cyber yeah. Monday.
Cyber Monday, right?
Yep. Yep.
So,
yeah. Cool.
There you go.
All right. Peace and grace. We'll see you in person for another Sunday morning, too. Bye, guys.